Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Last week we talked about games that you could play on your iOS devices. This week we'll be addressing one of the more practical aspects of life, shopping.
We'll speak with Alex Cohen, a graduate student in the business school at Drexel University, who is studying how people with various disabilities interact with the online marketplace. And he's hoping to use the results of this research to convince vendors that it's to their advantage as well as their customers to have their sites easier to use for everybody. We usually turn to the tip of the week at this point, but we've toyed with adding an extra segment to the show every week of jokes and calling it vitreous humor, but we only know two blindness jokes, but one of those is directly relevant to this topic.
Someone told me this a long time ago. It was the cartoon of the blind man who had his seeing eye dog by the leash and was swinging him around the store, and things were flying all over, broken all over the store, and someone ran up to him, and the caption says, "What are you doing? What are you doing swinging around that dog?" And the blind guy says, "Just looking around." Well, if you have any funnier jokes, you can send them to us at hosts@eyesonsuccess.net, and maybe they'll make it on. They can't be worse than that.
Back to the topic at hand. Now we're going to turn to our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Alex Cohen.
If you're unhappy with the service that you've received, let people know. That's the only way that anything will ever be different or make a change, is to let the right people know.
Oh, that is such a universal comment. That goes for people, whether they're sighted or blind, whether it's a shopping experience or any other kind of experience.
Well, it's a universal truth.
And it's important not only to let people know if sites are inaccessible or about some problems, because they might fix them, but sometimes they're not aware of the problem. So it's particularly important that you let them know and make them aware of these issues. And they're very happy to fix it sometimes.
And the converse is also true. If somebody's doing something right, they just love getting unsolicited compliments. If somebody's done the right thing and made your life easier as a blind person, tell them and let them know what they did that was right, and maybe they'll continue doing it.
Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
eSight, maker of digital eyewear designed to help improve vision for people with low vision and legal blindness. The technology can be used to read, see faces, and explore the world. More information is available at eSightEyewear.com. Let's start by meeting Alex and learning about the path that brought him to doing this research.
My name is Alex Cohen. I'm a doctoral student in the marketing department here at the LeBeau College of Business at Drexel University.
Many of our listeners have visual impairments. Do you?
Yes, I do. I have retinitis pigmentosa. I'm mostly blind and navigate the online environment with using three different screen readers. So I am a proud member of the club.
And I take it you use a cane to get around?
I do. That and seeing eye child really helps me. I have a 6-year-old and a 10-year-old that are often very eager to help their blind dad get around the city.
It is kind of nice to see how well younger children can adapt to helping out a parent who needs that kind of help. Our kids did the same with me when they were growing up. You started out life presumably with some amount of vision, and I take it your vision deteriorated over time. Can you give us a quick summary of how you got to where you are now in your eyesight and your educational program?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I had always had trouble seeing, and this was mostly blamed upon my nearsightedness, but I always had difficulty seeing at night or in dimly lit places. So when the other children could play at dusk, you know, right before the streetlights come on, I always really had trouble playing football or baseball, seeing the pop flies under the lights or playing in the dark. When I was 20 years old and I was at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas in the hotel administration program there, I got LASIK surgery, which corrected my eyes to maybe a 20/25, 20/30 level without glasses. And so this was a vast improvement over what I had previously been able to see, but I still had trouble at night. So then I went to Will's Eye Hospital here in Philadelphia and was then diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa. I said, okay, great, what do we do about that? And the doctor said, well, right now there's some things going on, but we don't really have a cure. So from that point on, I got this diagnosis, I guess maybe when I was 20 to 21 years old. I've been working with the Foundation Fighting Blindness and trying to do whatever I can, basically, to hopefully make myself be able to see again normally.
How has your vision loss impacted your career and educational path?
I always wanted to be a hotel general manager. So I worked in the hotel business in Las Vegas. And as my vision deteriorated, it got much scarier driving. So I decided to move back to Philadelphia, a more pedestrian-friendly area where I had grown up. Still working in the hotel business and became a general manager here in Philadelphia. And did this for a long time. Eventually, my vision just kept getting worse and worse, and as the economic conditions kind of slowed down a little bit around 2009, it was harder to find employment. So I went back to school and got a master's degree in hotel management and casino marketing, and decided to change my career path to actually become a professor. And I was accepted in the PhD program in marketing at Drexel, and that's where I ended up. So now, at this point, I really want my research to have an impact. Everything is towards the aim of making a more inclusive marketplace for the disabled community, specifically the blind and vision impaired.
And that's what we'll be talking about for most of this program. But I just wanted to comment, you are not the first person we've spoken to whose vision failed, which made it at least difficult for them to do the job that they had been doing. And they said, well, now what am I going to do? Went back to school and wound up doing what would be considered a much higher level position. And, you know, so many people, when they lose their vision, they're like, oh, I can't do this. I can't do that. What am I going to do? And, you know, it's great to talk to people who like said, well, okay, this is changing things. I'm going to make it a change for the better.
The transition is always difficult. I can imagine other people that I've spoken to, losing your vision gradually, you're not as aware of what is available to you in terms of screen readers or training to use a cane. So I was surprised and delighted that all these resources were available to me. But at the time when I was still employed and losing my vision, I wasn't as aware as I am now, and regrettably.
And being connected to those resources and services and knowing what's available is very important, particularly in making that transition.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic is Alex's research about the experiences people with visual impairments and other disabilities have in online shopping. You may find yourself nodding along at some of his descriptions that sound all too familiar, but he's quantifying individuals' experiences and putting the resulting information to very good use.
We wanted to talk specifically about some of your research that is pertinent to shopping for visually impaired people and how sometimes that is a bit of a nuisance. Can you give us sort of an overview of what your research centers upon?
Certainly. It is the online marketplace. And what I had learned is roughly 30 million Americans are impacted by online accessibility. It's not just the blind and vision impaired. It's really anyone who, for mobility or other cognitive reasons or impairments, is unable to use a point-and-click device such as a mouse or rollerball or some device such as that. So it's obvious that from a convenience standpoint, shopping online would be much better for the blind and vision impaired, and so much more convenient and friendly and faster than navigating the physical marketplace. But so many websites are just inaccessible. I mean, as I mentioned, I use three different screen readers for all different purposes, mostly, you know, within my academic career. But noticeably, it's so difficult to navigate the online environment. So to start, before I even got into specific research ideas, I wanted to see how widespread the problem was. So using two different evaluation tools, I went through and evaluated the top 100 retailers in the United States, according to the National Retail Federation, for their accessibility and their application to the accepted conformance standards, such as 508 compliance or the W3C 2.0 guidelines. And what I had found was there are so many priority A and AA errors, which the priority A error makes it impossible for somebody with using assistive technology to navigate the website. Priority AA makes it extremely difficult to navigate the online environment using assistive technology. So when a home page is riddled with these accessibility errors, it really, I mean, I would imagine that most blind or vision impaired consumers just give up, and the switching costs online are so low, it's just easy to find another retailer that might have a more friendly or accessible website.
So your argument is partially that these retailers will lose business because blind people will just be discouraged so quickly they won't even try if it's a hurdle and go someplace else.
Exactly. But there's more to it than just the homepage. There are other situations where the homepage is navigable and you can fill up your shopping cart, but then the transaction process is not accessible, either due to CAPTCHAs or even the sound links on the CAPTCHAs aren't ideal.
Some of those are pretty difficult to understand, and I'll have to go through them half a dozen times and then eventually call Nancy to do the visual CAPTCHA.
Yeah, that's very common. Probably important to mention, I mean, as I'd imagine many of your fans would know, visual impairment also is something that is common in the aged population, so hearing might be an issue as well. So it's just much more difficult than it has to be.
Well, you know, the visual CAPTCHAs aren't so easy to read either, and I can see just fine. But when you think about it, the whole point of the CAPTCHAs is they're supposed to be a little bit difficult to see and a little bit difficult to hear because they don't want ever increasingly excellent machine vision and machine speech recognition to be able to understand it.
But if they're too difficult, then the humans don't recognize them either, which is a problem.
True that.
So when I think of online transactions and going to web pages and web pages being accessible, I think of two types of things that might make it inaccessible. And one is functionally some of the program elements, combo boxes, edit fields, or things you have to navigate to just don't work properly with a screen reader or don't read with a screen reader. And that makes it kind of impossible to interact in an effective way with the website. The other thing I often think of is many of these websites are just so cluttered with information, and there is so much information to be reading one line at a time with a screen reader that it's difficult to find the information that's important to doing the transaction. What is your feeling about these different types of accessibility or inaccessibility?
The more cluttered a site is, the harder it is to either tab through the elements to get to what you need. For example, even just going to something like Yahoo, how many clicks it would take or how long it would take you to listen to all of the links as something that you were interested in was towards the bottom of the page. So when you're shopping, I mean, I know a huge problem is the alt text on the different images, particularly, I mean, this is more of a situation on what I'm looking into, retail websites, where you can click on an item, but maybe selecting the color, the size is very difficult, or the description is very vague. It might not say short sleeve or long sleeve or V-neck or scoop neck or even what the material is. And I mean, it's my understanding that that's what the initial NFB versus Target lawsuit was all about, was the use of alt text.
So you said you investigated a number of websites for accessibility. Can you tell us what you did?
When I say the top 100 retailers, that's actually by company and not just retailer. So I ended up maybe searching through 250 to 300 websites because, you know, for example, Gap Incorporated, it's not just Gap, it's also Banana Republic and Athleta and many other companies, Old Navy, what have you. Most retailers are the same way. So they have multiple stores under their main corporate umbrella. So I went through a lot of websites, and different things that I looked for when I was rating these websites. I looked for the number of errors on the homepage, the percentage of pages versus the total pages with errors, the number of errors on the transaction page, and also we looked at the number of errors on the career landing pages. So people who might be looking for jobs and might be blind or vision impaired. And we also took account of which websites had an accessibility link. And most do not, but some of the retailers down at the bottom part of the website where, you know, it says contact us and FAQs and all these other things would say have a link for accessibility. And it would say most commonly, if you are having difficulty navigating this website, you can call this number and a customer service representative will help you. I appreciated that they had that link available. However, it's so far on the bottom of the page. I mean, that must be pretty difficult for most people to scroll down that far to actually find that, to seek that assistance.
So what were some of your overall results when you analyzed these hundreds of different kinds of sites? What did you find?
I found that no sites are completely clean. There are sites that are better than others. For example, Macy's was only 3% of their total pages had errors on it, and they were very helpful in the accessibility department. Nordstrom was 99% inaccessible. You know, there's hundreds of different examples of how accessible or inaccessible the websites were. What I really did, I don't do a study on the specific number of errors. That's not part of my research. Also, that's interesting from a policy standpoint, but not from an academic standpoint. So what I really went after was public opinion from the blind and vision impaired consumer about their reaction to inaccessible websites.
So you analyze these websites with some automated tool to find errors in terms of not conforming to standard HTML or web design practices?
Yes, well, specifically, I used a tool, the Sort Site Evaluation tool, and the Wave Accessibility tool developed through WebAIM to look at these different websites to count up the errors. So I have a fairly expansive table of all the retailers and the specific number of errors, priority A and priority AA, and where they appeared. But again, for the purposes of my research, I just went through this initial project just to show that this was a real problem. And the conformance standards that I checked against, it's my understanding that 508 standards are going away very soon, and the W3CG 2.0 guidelines are what's going to be adopted as the norm. That's what I rated these sites using that specific conformance criteria.
So you said at the beginning that you were hoping to have an impact through your research and the work that you're doing, and I understand that you've collected all of this information. How have you been able to use this information to improve the situation?
Well, so far, I've used my initial findings as justification for funding for the research. So the impact that I want to have, I want to point towards a policy change where we can really look at Title III of the ADA and make it include the online environment as public space. Anybody who has access to the internet, which essentially is anybody with a cell phone now, let alone a computer, has access to these sites. So I want to re-examine and reopen this discussion about Title III.
You mentioned the ADA, or Americans with Disabilities Act. To what extent does that or does it not cover things like the accessibility of websites?
There is no specific mention of websites or the online environment, which makes sense because at the time the legislation was drafted, the online environment was not commonplace. So there's nothing about it specifically in the legislation. As it currently stands, the opinion is that if a retailer offers an equivalent service, then they don't need to have an accessible website.
So, for example, if you can call them up and order something that covers their backs.
Essentially, but what I would argue is in terms of the equivalency, you look at what websites offer you in terms of just the ability to shop and browse, the ability to read through user comments and reviews.
Right, you can't do that on the phone.
Right, exactly. Also, there are a lot of websites that have the built-in functionality where people who purchase this also purchase this or enjoyed this. That's something that's very useful to a lot of consumers that you completely miss if you're just calling in.
Up until this point, we've pretty much been discussing what might be considered a general preamble to the specific research that you're working on. Can you describe one of your more specific follow-on projects?
One project that I'm working on specifically that, I think all of my research is interesting, but it is truly a unique perspective, is to show how complaining and negative word of mouth from a blind or vision impaired person to a normally sighted person in their social network, be it, you know, friends, family, coworker, acquaintances, how this negative word of mouth based on an accessibility failure, like the inaccessibility of a website, how that would impact the opinions towards that retailer of the normally sighted people in the social network. So if I complained to my wife that this website was inaccessible and I don't think we should shop there anymore, she very well might avoid that retailer and not shop there anymore. And she might tell other people that she knows, as well as I would tell other people I know, that, look, this was a really difficult time for me and I couldn't make this work. And I don't think that they care about the blind and vision impaired population. And I don't think you should shop there. And see how that affects people's opinions of shopping at a particular retailer that has an inaccessible website. So it's not just the 30 million people. It's also the people within their social network that might avoid the firm based on these kinds of service failures.
So it sounds like part of your research is actually coming up with sufficient information to motivate the vendors to improve their websites because you're able to demonstrate to them quantitatively how much business they're losing or how much potential business they're losing.
Exactly.
Are there other parts of your work that you think our listeners might enjoy hearing about?
Well, there's one more project that I'm working on that's very interesting that goes beyond just the blind and vision impaired.
Mm-hmm.
But I am developing a rating system for businesses, for hotels and restaurants and shopping malls and, you know, basically an entire municipality, the transportation infrastructure, rating their accessibility, very similar to how the LEED scale rates businesses and buildings for environmental and construction attributes. I'm doing the same thing for businesses. So if you see my surveys come out, for that asking you what types of amenities and services you would like to see throughout these different businesses or transportation options, please participate in these surveys. It's really The only way that we can make our research have an impact is to have your listeners make their voices heard by taking these surveys.
So we've talked about a number of problems and issues on online retail for the visually impaired. How optimistic are you that things will change in the future?
I think it's going to come from a lot of different sources. I think it has to come from, you know, public outcry from the affected population, showing businesses that they're going to lose revenues for not having an accessible website. It also comes from legal decisions and what the courts find. I mean, there are countless accessibility discrimination suits that typically settle. They don't often result in definitive decisions that change the law or put certain laws, you know, on the books for these businesses to follow. To change the ADA in Title III is an act of Congress, which I don't know. We can certainly hope for the best, but you know that's another difficult hurdle. So I'm trying to chip away at this problem.
And I'm sure we all join him in hoping that he has a lot of success. Now for this week's final item, how to learn more about Alex's research and how to contact him.
So if people wanted to find out more about your research as it progresses, where would they go? Do you have a website?
Well, right now, I don't have a specific website because I'm a student still at this point. I'm still a doctoral student. But they can always look up my profile through the LeBeau College of Business in the marketing department. And I am on LinkedIn, where I do have my publications available, as well as future projects that I'm working on.
If people wanted to contact you directly via email, is that okay?
Yes, absolutely. My email address is ahc43@drexel.edu.
Great. And are you, in addition to LinkedIn, are you on Facebook or Twitter or any of those?
I am on Facebook. And I do not tweet right now, but hope to be tweeting soon once I'm done with my doctoral program.
And as usual, you can go to the show notes for this episode to find all of the contact information and email information that we discussed. Just go to www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for show number 1604. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about technical tips and tricks. Pete's been blind since infancy and makes it a point to follow what products and programs are available for people with vision loss, especially high-tech ones. And I will be interviewing him about some tools that he's found particularly helpful and some surprising tricks he's learned to make it easier to operate mainstream programs.
You'll also hear some fun demos.
If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-210-8094.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com, at Eyes on Success, or Twitter @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success and have a nice day.